This week on The Big Show, educator, actress, and playwright Bathsheba Smithen joins us to discuss her upcoming one-woman play, From Divorce to Restoration. Plus, Emmy Award-winning host of USA 9's morning show, Great Day Washington, Marquette Shepherd, will also stop by to talk films and summer fun. In addition, we'll have entertainment news and reviews of the latest films, including Skyscraper, all on the latest episode of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. Let's go. And welcome to another episode of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. I am Tim Gordon. It is a wonderfully beautiful and hot day here in the nation's capital. Looking outside the windows of our studio. Well, if I can look past the people who are changing ceilings. But outside of that, we are in good shape. But we have a really, really interesting show today. As you heard at the top, got a couple of in-studio guests, which is the first time that since we've been here at DC Radio that we've had two in-studio guests, I think. Jessica, yes? First time? Cool. So, yeah, so Marquette Shepherd is going to be on in our next segment. I really owe this young lady an appearance on this show because I've been on hers twice, and she has not let me forget that I have not brought her on, so she's going to come by. It's wonderful to finally catch up with her. In addition to that, we're also going to talk to a local playwright here that I had an opportunity to meet last week, named Bathsheba Smithen, who is going to talk to us about her new play, which opens this weekend, From Divorce to Restoration. And of course, coming up in a couple of minutes, we'll have Wilson Morales, who's going to update us, hopefully, on the Emmy nominations. And with that, I'm just going to go straight to Wilson right now. Wilson Morales, welcome to the show.
Hey. Hi.
How are you, kind sir?
Good. You know, the Emmy nominations just got revealed, and it's, you know, it's a slew of nominations for African Americans, so it could be a record number.
Well, let's talk about that, man. Who got nominated this year?
Well, we have, you know, it was expected that Sterling K. Brown would be nominated, as well as Donald Glover, Tracy Ellis Ross, Tammy Newton, and Jeffrey Wright. Those were expected. The ones that made the cut that were, you know, very exciting were Issa Rae for Insecure. Kenan Thompson got nominated for Saturday Night Not Live. You know, he's done put in over 10 years there, so he's well-deserved. Regina King got a nomination for 7 Seconds. John Legend's definitely going for the EGLT for his nominations for Jesus Christ Superstar. And his co-star, Brandon Victor Dixon, also got nominated in there. Cicely, and I think we had 3 people nominated and for Best Guest Actress in a Drama Series, which included Samara Wiley for The Handmaid's Tale, Viola Davis for her 1 episode on Scandal, and I'm trying to think, who's the 3rd one? Oh, yeah, and Cicely Tyson for How to Get Away with Murder.
Wow, nice. So any snubs, anybody that we were looking forward to?
I haven't gone through the list yet to see who got left out so far, but so far are those who you wanted in, got in, so far, yeah.
All right.
You know, I had a preliminary amount, I had a certain amount of people who should get nominated, and they got in so far. So I haven't seen yet, you know, who got snubbed.
Nice. Well, you know, like I said, I haven't had an opportunity to see the list. They just announced the nominations within the hour, so I'll take a look at that. But it's interesting, man. I mean, it sounds like from what you're saying that all of the usual suspects were able to push through this year.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's never easy. You know, it's like, you know, you still want to go. You know, getting nominated is one thing. It's an accolade. It's respect for your peers. Winning is a whole different story, you know. But going to the dance is a big feeling.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely cool. And and I'm interested, man. It looks like Game of Thrones led the way, which is really interesting to me, because you would think next year after the nominations come out, after the show closes, that it'll be kind of the big send-off for this show. But they did it 1 year prematurely, man. That's interesting.
Well, no, I think, you know, sometimes you don't want to wait to the last minute. You never know what show is going to spark off and come out and, you know, and just be dominating, you know. This was Us came out of the blue. Look how well it did. It didn't win, but, you know, you never know. You know, when it comes to TV, climate changes. You never know.
Now, I'm looking at the nominations right now. So for Outstanding Drama Series, The Americans, The Crown, Game of Thrones, The Handmaid's Tale, Stranger Things, This Is Us, and Westworld were all nominated. Interesting. Okay. I watch a lot of those shows. I'm trying to think. Okay, Outstanding Television Movie, Fahrenheit 451, Flint, Paterno, The Tale, which I saw at Sundance, and Black Mirror USS Callister. Great episode. So those were all nominated, and I'm trying to think of, I want to see Outstanding Comedy. And I can't find Outstanding Comedy right now. But yeah, it looks like it's a strong list. I see a lot of the nominees. Jesus Christ Superstar, live in concert. I had an opportunity to watch that several months ago. That was outstanding. So I'm glad to see both Legend and Brandon Dixon, John Legend and Brandon Dixon, push through for that as well. Oh, there it is. Outstanding Comedy Series, Atlanta, Barry, Blackish, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Glow, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and Silicon Valley. Interesting, Wilson. So anything jumps out at you that it's going to be its year this year? Are we talking Game of Thrones? Is Handmaid's Tale going to assert itself? Is there any show with people of color that you see that may be victorious in addition to people like Sterling K. Brown that we kind of expect will have an opportunity to win again?
Well, you know, Atlanta seems to be the favorite, you know, which is great. But at the same time, you know, they're competing against Blackish. You know, and both shows are tremendously good this year. You know, we can only have one, you know, but there are other shows that are out there that are equally good. But it was nice to see that, you know, not only was Donald Glover nominated, but Brian Tyree Henry and Zazie Beetz, his co-stars, were also nominated. So that was that's a good telling for that show. You know, you look at Blackish, you know, Anthony Anderson and Tracee Ellis Ross are perennial nominees, but yet they have yet to win. You know, hopefully they're not going to have the same showing like Donald Glover, who was nominated like I think 3 or 4 times in a row, but walked away empty-handed, and his show's no longer on the air.
Right. Wow. Okay. So yeah, it looks like a little something for everybody, man, in these Emmy Award nominations. Because like I said, there are several of these shows that are shows that I watch. There's so much, and I always tell people when we talk about television, we're kind of in the golden age of television. There are so many quality shows that are on. So the Emmys to me represents just a small smidgen of like a lot of the quality work that's on there. So I know at some point today, Wilson, once you go through and look, that you're going to probably create something that's going to be on your site that talks about some of the snubs or surprises. So I look forward to reading that.
Yeah, there are more surprises than snubs. You know, there are definitely more surprises than snubs. I had a preliminary list as far as who should be nominated. Like, as I mentioned before, they seem to all have gotten in. You know, and then I think there are like an extra somewhere between 7 to 10 people that got more, you know, like Viola Davis and Samira Wiley, you know, they got in. You know, I haven't gone through a whole list yet, you know, so you've got more names than ever. I think the record we've had in 1 year in terms of acting was somewhere between 18 and 22. So I don't know if we've matched it or surpassed it.
Well, one of the other people that I wanted to make sure that we recognize was Sandra Oh, who became the first Asian American to be nominated for lead actress in a drama series for her work in Killing Eve. So I was just reading that online. So that's, you know, congratulations to her. She's been doing some amazing work as well.
Yeah, you know, she's been around for a long time through her work on Grey's Anatomy. You know, so it's finally, you know, she's finally got her due as a lead actress.
All right, Wilson, so quick, we got a couple of minutes left, man. Is there anything else of note that is happening this week?
You know, you've got Skyscraper coming out, you know, with The Rock. You know, it's a good old-fashioned Tower Inferno meets Die Hard. You know, I think lately now what you're going to get throughout the summer is just pure fun action movies, as opposed to something, you know, especially if it's not a sequel. Well, then again, we have Mission Impossible coming out as well as Denzel Washington and his first ever sequel coming out with The Equalizer 2. So, you know, we're at the end stretch of the summer madness, because once you hit to August, then it's a matter of, like, what's going to pop.
Well, you know, I can't wait to talk about Skyscraper, which I had an opportunity to see. And it's actually the only movie, as you know, that's opening this weekend. So it's a slow week, man. I mean, we're in the dog days of summer right now. And as you said, I know Equalizer 2 drops next week. It's a couple of other event films that are coming up. I know the Crazy Rich Asians are coming out in several weeks. So, yeah, man, it's a slow time period. But as I said, Wilson, I look forward to your reporting on this, because you kind of have a pulse on this in a way that not too many other people do. So before we let you get out of here, man, no, what were you about to say?
No, it's just a matter of trying to be on top of things and let people aware of, so, you know, which people of color got a nomination. Sometimes, you know, you may not recognize a name, but at least you'll recognize a face.
Well, you do, and we do. We talk about that all the time. We do. Quick question for you. Did you get a chance to see Black Klansman yet?
I have not. I know they're starting to do some early screenings. I've yet to see it. I will be seeing it pretty soon. I've yet to see it yet.
All right. I'll give you a call later on. We'll talk.
Okay.
All right. All right, Wilson. So before we let you get out of here, man, where can people read all the content that you will produce around this year's Emmy Awards?
You can see it over at blackfin.com, which is the same words you use for Twitter as well as Facebook and Instagram.
All right. Thanks, Wilson. We'll talk, man.
All right.
All right. Thanks. And of course, that is Wilson Morales from blackfilm.com, who joins us at the top of every show. So we're going to take a break right now, and we're going to come back on the other side. And it's going to be time to do what we call Ladies First Day at Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. It's all ladies all day. Marquette Shepherd will join us next. You guys keep it where you got it. You are listening to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon at dcradio.gov. And welcome back to the show. Coming up later on, we'll review the lone new release this week in theaters, and that's the iconic sound of the Wu-Tang Clan's Cream, Cash Rules Everything Around Me, which is a perfect segue to our next guest. Our next guest is the host of WUSA 9's Great Day Washington, as well as a lifestyle journalist. She's been featured on top-rated national morning shows, including NBC's Today Show, ABC's Live with Kelly, and VH1's former morning show, Big Morning Buzz Live. If that's not enough, she's also author of the number one book in the country, the inspirational children's book, What is Light? Welcome to the big show, Emmy Award-winning morning host, Marquette Shepherd.
Hello, Tim Gordon. How are you? The number one selling children's book on Amazon right now, What is Light is my children's book. So
wouldn't that be in the country?
It's in the country. It's on Amazon. Yeah, Amazon really does rule the country. So let's just say
they
that.
Do. So welcome, Marquette.
Thank you for having me, Tim.
Marquette, it's been a journey getting you here.
Well, it has been, but let's just be clear. I was trying to bring Pookie and them from the neighborhood, because I love to bring my community wherever I go.
Nobody knows who Pookie
and
is, by the
Pookie
way.
Pookie and them. Everybody has a Pookie in their life. I was trying to bring Pookie and them to the Tim Gordon radio show, and you put the smack down. You said, no, just bring yourself.
I just can't bring
the neighborhood.
So let me ask you a question. When I've been a guest right. on your show twice,
you've been an amazing guest.
Now imagine if I would have showed up with four people and been like, yeah, I'm bringing the community on. We're going to talk about whatever we're going to talk about.
Let me tell you something.
Your producer would have been like, really?
hold on.
Word.
I didn't just roll up in here, right?
Not today. I asked you
if I could bring Pookie in there, and you said no. So here I am by myself, Marquette Shepherd. Shout out to the community. I would have had everybody listening up in here if it were my choice.
All right, Marquette. So you were at work this morning.
Yes.
You did a show. And what was on today's show?
Oh, today's show was amazing. I know that you are a connoisseur of films, and we had a 25-year reunion with a director and some actors from the 1993 coming-of-age story, The Sandlot.
Nice.
And it was amazing. So they're in town for MLB All-Star Weekend.
Right.
They're going to be doing a screening and signing autographs. And what was so amazing about this reunion on our show was we got to see the real camaraderie between these guys that started when they were like 10, 11, and 12 years old. We got to see that play out on a DC TV stage. And these guys really are friends. The director is like their camp counselor.
Right.
And they said filming the movie was like summer camp. And the director kept having to find the guys. They were sneaking into Basic Instinct to watch Sharon Stone back in 1993. They should have been rehearsing their lines like teenage boys do.
Yeah.
So we got some really fun stories. So I've been talking movies since I woke up this morning.
All right. So I was doing my research to talk to you, which is really interesting because I didn't do my research to come on your show. I was just like coming on.
I didn't know that. No one would ever know.
You're a California girl.
That's right. Born and raised in Los Angeles.
How'd you end up on the East Coast?
It's a funny story because I come from an entertainment family. My my sister worked at Sony Picture Studios for many years. My mother is an educator but also has a passion for acting, so she's also an actress. She's been featured on Scandal and some other platforms. And so I decided that part of my becoming my own person was that I was going to do something different than what everybody around me was interested in, and I was going to move to DC and become a serious journalist. Well, isn't this a perfect place to become a serious journalist?
I was going to ask you how that worked out for you. I mean, you know, you have a show. Your show is kicking butt. You are very good at the show. I mean, I've been on it. You're very comfortable. You know, I love the set design of everything you guys are doing over at Great Day Washington. So you've been there how long now?
I've been there 3 years, and it's truly one of the best TV jobs I've ever had. But I did do serious journalism. Some people probably remember me from WAMU. I spent 2 years as a morning reporter and then an afternoon reporter there. And, you know, covering crime, politics, D.C. is very important. People need to know, but it's a tough job. And I'm just so blessed and grateful that I did that. It makes me a better television host, but now I get to come in and interview movie directors and actors and cook in the Great Day Kitchen and just kind of share a different side of the DC community.
So your show, I guess, is modeled after a lot of these other morning shows, you know, like a Today Show or I forget what they call the ABC version of that. Is there an aspiration for you if they called you one day and said, we want to bring you up to New York and put you on the big stage? Is that something you'd actually be open to?
I love my D.C. community, but I don't know too many people who, if they got a phone call and they say, we want to bring you up to New York.
We want to make you national.
And put you on the big national stage. Who would say no to an opportunity like that?
You might look at the family, might go, no, Mom, we like this community. We don't want to live in New York. All that money they're going to pay you, we can survive on the small money you make here.
I love how you just said, okay, for the record, Tim and I did not talk about any type of money that Marquette makes.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm just saying that when we talking national.
But look, don't trip. I do live a very humble lifestyle, and I love D.C. But when opportunity knocks, I think it behooves anyone to open the door if they're willing and able to.
And also they said, I forget the saying of preparation, how it meets opportunity. You're preparing now. You put in your time. You're doing an amazing job there. But I do see that as something at some point that may be an opportunity that's afforded to you.
Well, thank you. I love how you're looking in the crystal ball and you see a bright future
for me. We can't keep you in D.C. forever. We can't keep you here.
D.C.'s been
talented.
Good to me. D.C.'s been very good to me. I've been here since, oh my gosh, like 2002. 2002, the summer, August 1st, 2002, or was that 2003, I went to a nightclub not too far from these studios called Dream.
Oh my God. Yeah, back in the day. Yeah, Dream.
Yes. And I met my boyfriend there, who turned into my husband, who turned into my best friend. And so, I mean, DC's been amazing to me.
Nice, nice. So I saw that you guys were on vacation recently.
Yes.
And you were out in Cali.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes. See, I do my homework.
Yeah, Cali's a great place to go to vacation.
Mm-hmm, I saw you. So now, what part? Did you grow up in Southern California?
So I grew up in Los Angeles. And I vacationed most recently in Carmel by the Sea. And if anyone is a Clint Eastwood fan, that is where Clint Eastwood lives.
Mayor.
He was the mayor there.
Mm-hmm.
His picture is still up in the ice cream shop. And Betty White also lives there. I have random entertainment knowledge. Just quiz me, and I'll probably tell you something that's
real. You're one of those people.
I grew up on television.
Yeah.
In L.A., I grew up around television, so I truly do love the medium. And who else can come here and tell you that they went to visit Clint Eastwood's town?
Now, that's it. Actually, we'll talk about that off-site, because that's a place I wanted to go out and hit, because he actually filmed a couple of movies out there.
Yes.
I think Play Misty for Me was one of them he filmed out there,
okay,
like in the early 1970s. But what I was interested in and wanting to have you in is that you're doing something every day where you have to prepare for almost any opportunity. I've seen you've had dancers come on the show. You've had playwrights come on the show. You've had fitness people. I think the day I was there, you guys are doing some kind of of a fitness challenge. How is it to prepare for something where almost anything can happen on any given day?
Absolutely. I've milked a goat on the show. We had a miniature pony. There was some animal, I think it was a llama, just decided to have a massive, massive potty break right on our studio floor right before we were going to go on air. And then there's the element of the teleprompter not working, and maybe I haven't memorized my lines, but I got to know who my guest is and introduce them on the show. And then there's the element of maybe my microphone falls off on live TV, which has happened before, and I got to pick it up and keep rolling. And maybe somebody in the control room decides to have a whole conversation with me while I'm live on TV.
You mean like Jessica does me sometimes?
I'm busy. I'm kind of hosting a TV show right now. Can you not talk to me?
Right.
So, you know, we have all of that good fun. And the way you prepare is you know who your guests are. You research them ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to them before the show, and then you remain open-minded, because somebody could drop a bomb that we didn't prep for on live TV, and I got to be ready to follow up with that and take the viewers on a journey that they're interested in going on.
Now, we always talk about in these different mediums how, you know, like in the entertainment industry, you always have people who are singers who want to act. You have actors who want to sing. I'm assuming that there is this kind of back and forth with television and radio, right? So you look at stuff that we're doing, because I think our next guest has a radio show as well. Did you have any aspirations of being on air and using that voice and all that energy? And hey, DC, it's Marcus Shepherd.
My voice isn't deep. Hey, DC. No, that's not going to work. I always wanted to be on television. I only went into radio as a means to an end. I mean, every single time I've worked in radio, I was like, maybe this will get me closer to my goal of being on television. So I've always wanted to do TV.
Well, you know, I mean, you're a beautiful young woman.
Thank you.
Not to say that, you know, there are people who are not attracted at on television. Not to say that.
Okay, pause.
No, that wasn't about you. I was just thinking.
No,
I'm like,
we don't want to shade anybody on this show.
Watch this. Look. No,
yeah,
no comment.
Okay.
No, I won't say anything. But yes,
so shady.
But no,
so shady.
We used to laugh that people would have like a face for radio.
Right,
so,
right.
But no, that's really not the
you
case.
You know what I truly believe though?
Mm.
I think it doesn't really matter what you look like on the outside. If you are good and you're doing the best with what you got, your God-given facial structure, you can be successful in TV. I really believe that. I really believe that. Like, if you just take whoever, just their base, and they are excellent as a television host or a journalist or a TV commentator or talking head, and they do the best and they put their hair the best way that fits their facial structure, right, and they put on their makeup and they wear nice colors and they're giving you substance and nobody can tell it to the audiences the way they can, I really believe they can be successful. Superficially, maybe what you look like gets you an interview, and if you're really beautiful, it gets you in the door. But what you know and that knowledge and your skills, that's what keeps you there, and I believe that's what helps you excel.
I would agree with all that, but I would just add in a caveat.
as a person
that has watched a lot of television news, and it depends from market to market. So you're in a major market here in D.C. I know when I'm out in L.A. and I watch the local L.A. news, the reporters look a certain way. But when you get to Market 72 and you in Sioux City, Iowa, it's a real different game with television.
I've never been to Sioux City, Iowa.
I'm just saying, if you go to any small town, and they're running local news, Harrisburg, PA, they're not going to be that sharp kind of, you know, that big city major market look. So I do think there's a certain look that has to come into play because people can see it more so than just visualize it or listen to it on radio. So I'm not saying that everything you're saying is not right. And she's smiling because she's like, where's Tim going with this? I'm just saying that there is an element that visually things have to be appealing.
It is a visual medium, I'll
correct,
say that.
Correct. So having gotten you out, having tap danced out of that fire really quickly, I want to segue to your book.
Sure.
That you wrote. So your children's book, what was the genesis or the inspiration behind that?
Well, I see myself at the core as a storyteller.
Right.
And about 4.5 years ago, I had my first child, Wesley, and I was ending one TV gig and not starting another one. So I took a year off of my professional life to just be at home with my baby, recover, figure out my next steps. And while I wasn't going to an office or a studio every day and working on my craft, I still had the passion for storytelling. And my little yummy baby was so chubby and so cute, I decided I'm gonna write a book of wisdom for him, and every day of the year I'm gonna write down some knowledge, and when he gets older I'll have 365 messages of wisdom for him. And so that little book turned into poems in my notebook, and I started writing stories. And at night, I would read him bedtime stories, and I noticed, I don't like the way this story ends, or I'm going to tweak the beginning of this story. So I started kind of just serendipitously or organically editing children's stories. And What Is Light was a poem that I wrote in a notebook that I got at a CBS workshop many years ago. So I wrote this poem down in a notebook, read it to my son, didn't do anything with it, and then I decided, you know what? All of these children's books I'm reading out here, they're good, and I think my writings are good too. Let me go ahead and send it out to the publishing world, see what happens. And rather quickly, I got a publishing deal. And I was so happy because the woman who decided to publish my work, Deneen Milner.
Oh, my God. Really?
Do you know
Deneen quite well.
Okay. Well, there you go.
That.
Well, yeah. For the audience, Deneen Milner is a celebrity writer, a New York Times bestselling author. She co-wrote Steve Harvey's Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man, Taraji's memoir, Around the Way Girl. But she, a few years ago, got into children's books. And so she wrote another bestseller, Early Sunday Morning. And she just started building this children's book publishing imprint. And I reached out to her at the right time, and she offered me a publishing deal. And like I said, it was a year at home writing with my baby alone. And then it was a year of my writing sitting there doing nothing. Then I hooked up with Deneen, and it's another year before the book comes out. And now the book is out. And I just want to tell you how proud I am to feature so many wonderful brown babies in a baby book. How many baby books, Tim, how many babies are you around, first and foremost?
I'm guessing not too many. Right.
But if you get around some babies, what you'll notice is baby books are full of talking animals.
Right.
And maybe people who don't look like they're of the African diaspora, although they're wonderful, beautiful books. But very rarely do you have a baby book featuring children of color, page after page after page, in a positive light. And it's called What is Light? Because I want to teach children, and not just brown babies, I think any baby can benefit from this message. I want to teach children from a very young age, you have a light inside of you, and that light inside of you can guide you in what you decide to do as you grow up. And the light inside of you, Tim, is why you have this amazing website and film empire here in DC, and why we all know you and go to you for film reviews.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to read this really quickly, because, and I'll just read this out loud. It said, here's the thing I love about babies, especially brown ones. Truly, they make me swoon. Everything about them is rainbows and juicy juice and bubbling brown sugar, sweet, sweet. And it makes my heart beat fast to hear them giggle and play and talk and hug and just be. They're everything good, everything right, and they are light. It is this sentiment that pulled at her heartstrings, when Deneen Milner's heartstrings, when she first read the manuscript from Marquette Shepard's What is Light? A beautiful book that explores the many ways light finds its way into a child's everyday world.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Wow.
When did Deneen post that?
Last week.
Okay, I'm going to share that. That was beautiful.
That was nice. So where can people, or where can mothers or people who are interested in your book, give them the information on where they can go on Amazon to find it?
Absolutely. Well, the thing is, why Deneen, I'm so glad I'm hooked up with her, is she is a businesswoman, powerhouse, author, editor, and publisher. You can find my book just about anywhere. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Politics and Prose, Busboys and Poets. She did all of that work. I'm just the writer and the vessel. But really, truly, I don't know how books get in bookstores.
That's why
you got to hook up with a publisher at some point. And I don't know anything about self-publishing. So that was beautiful. And the main thing is, I think a light clicked off in me in my 20s. Where I was like, oh, I got to go follow my passion. This is what I want to do. And that's when I started to light up, you know? And maybe for some people it's in their 30s, and maybe it's for some people it's in their 40s. But I want to tell our babies, you follow your passion. You let the light inside of your heart guide you from day one. And then who knows, maybe we'll have a little brown Mark Zuckerberg when he's 17 years old, because from the time he was born, his mom was telling him, let your light shine, boo-boo.
And she would say, just like that.
Is that boo-boo? Is that, that's what Mama Gordon instilled in you. And you know what I mean? And here you are, the authority on DC film.
All right. And I'll let that be your final word. Marquette Shepard, it is always a pleasure. I want you to come back, though, seriously, because we need more time for you. We're going
to
take a break right now. When we come back on the other side, we're going to go a little more serious. Bathsheba Smithen is in studio. So we'll talk from divorce to restoration. You guys keep it where you got it. You're listening to The Big Show, Keeping It Real with Film Gordon, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Wendell Pierce, and you're listening to The Big Show, Keeping It Real with Film Gordon.
Oh my God.
On Film Gordon.
When the East is in the house.
Oh my God.
When the East is in the house.
Oh my God.
Welcome back to The Big Show. And that was the funky warning of trouble to come, Danger, by Blase Blaz. Coming up in the next segment, we'll review the latest adventures from The Rock, Skyscraper. But speaking of danger, our next guest began her company as a means of fusing the current culture with education to help others become more self-aware and to unlock their human potential. She believes that when we unlock our potential, we are fully capable of using this new era as a mechanism to take human communication to another level. For her, she believes music is the conduit through which that can happen. Welcome to the Big Show, the CEO and founder of Cage Free Voices, Bathsheba Smithen.
Hey, Tim. Thank you so much for having me.
That was an amazing introduction. Hey, I try to do what I can to help. It's called research. Bathsheba, you and I had an opportunity to meet, was it last weekend? Or the weekend before last?
About two weekends ago.
At the Martha's Vineyard African American Film Festival. So we were out hanging out at a pitch session.
Sesame Street. Yeah.
Wow. I was like sitting there like, who knew
that right. you can meet people.
Right. But I'm saying, who knew the level of detail that went in to them looking and issuing out RFPs for people to learn how to count, you know, 1 through 20, you know, A, B, C. I was like, wow.
And it makes sense because I'm a curriculum developer that you would have to put that much detail into it. But I hadn't even factored that into the equation when I thought about Sesame Street. Just something as simple as you need to make sure that this character has a helmet on.
Right. that was one of the other things that I found to be fascinating, that everything had to be thought out. Nothing happened by accident.
Yeah.
But you and I were sitting next to each other at this pitch session, and I was laughing because the whole time we're sitting there, I saw you had this charger, and you was kind of charging this phone, but you were using the phone, so it wasn't charging. And I was just sitting there before we even started talking, I was thinking, man, she is just going to be wasting her time. This is just not going to work.
You keep saying my phone wasn't charging. It was charging.
It was not charging, man. I kept looking over. I was like, it's not charging.
I mean, it didn't charge as rapidly as it could have charged.
It did not charge. But we struck up a conversation and we started talking. And then I think you came to the next panel, which I was actually on.
With my mentor.
Yeah, Gwen Kelly.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because that was interesting. Not a packed house at all.
Right.
I was on stage with I forget the gentleman's name, but he was the head of Monarch Magazine.
Will
Walters. Yeah. And brother from Saatchi, the advertising agency, and I forget what his name was. But good brothers. And we were up there talking about the business of film and, you know, the economics of film. Yeah. I was trying to bring the film history to the table. So what did you think?
I thought it was a phenomenal session. It was definitely very informative, especially since I'm making this transition into transitioning from theater into possibly moving this show into film. So I learned a lot listening from your panel session, and I think the questions that my mentor asked were definitely on point to give the audience a lot of insight into what's going on with the paradigm shift that is happening and how a lot of African Americans are looking for a different way to bring about film to its audience.
So the panel that I was on was called The Color of Inclusion.
Yeah.
So it was actually really cool. But the thing that I liked about you and your energy is that we were talking about, you know, both of us sharing, you know, different radio shows. You have yours on another network. Both of us being kind of artists.
Yeah.
And then we talked about your one-woman play. And I really wanted to have you on today to share with our audience more information about that. It's called From Divorce to Restoration. Now, I was teasing you.
I was teasing you
because we were just talking before you came on air. Like, I normally kind of am able to find and research a lot of stuff. I couldn't find anything on this. And I was like, you really going to walk in here and surprise me with this? So I want to hear this story. What was the genesis behind the creation of this stage play, which is going to debut this weekend?
Ooh, that's a loaded question.
I know. Minds want to know.
So the first thing Tim asked me was, when I told him the name of the play, he said, what did he do?
What did he do? He did something, because you know, I made a play out of it.
Well, the emphasis is not so much on what he did.
Uh-huh.
The emphasis is on my contribution to that process and how I dealt with the process. So, the genesis behind this play all started, I think it started in 2014 when my life was abruptly changed. I did not anticipate going through a divorce.
Right.
So the rug was kind of ripped from beneath me, and I ended up having to find a place to live with my 4-year-old daughter. So I spent 7 months with my sister and my brother in love in Waldorf, and I became a part of her organization called Real Women. And in that organization, I learned how to channel my pain into purpose. And on my way to an interview, this was 2016, I was going to an interview that my sister had in New York. And while I was driving back, I just had this rush of ideas about a play. And the topic immediately came to me. And I turned to her while I was driving, and I said, I'm going to do a one-woman show. And I'm going to call it From Divorce to Restoration. And she was so exhausted. When she turned around, she said, that sounds awesome. So, it ended up starting there. So immediately following me saying that I was going to start, I was going to write a play. So let me back up a little bit. I am a spoken word artist. Mm-hmm. I'm a music artist. And so to write a play, I had never written a play before, but I've always written poetry. I write curriculum. I write books. So I was like, this shouldn't be too hard, you know? And it came naturally. But when I said that I was going to do it, I didn't wait at all to publicize that I was going to do a play, because I told myself if I delay it, I probably won't do it. I'm going to talk myself out of it. So I immediately that night, I posted a flyer saying I'm going to do a one woman show. Save the date. I mean, I don't know what the date is, but just know that it's going to be like around spring or fall. And after, like, the moment I put up that flyer, two of my really close girlfriends, they're also a part of the show. Their names are Talia Simpson and Shannon Webster. They immediately responded via Facebook, and we ended up working together. And then I ended up having this entire team of individuals come together to produce this play. It's incredible how everything unfolded. And so now we are just, what, 2 days away from the show? What's today? Thursday, Friday. The show is Saturday.
Okay, so from the time that you decided you were going to write it, wrote it, till now, what's the balance of time that we're talking about total?
I wrote it in November. And so it's been about 7 to 9, how many months is it?
Wow. Yeah. How long did it take you to write it?
Not long. It took me about a week.
3 acts.
Yeah.
Wow. Man.
Actually, it's 2 acts, but it's a 90-minute show.
So we're talking, what, 40-minute intermission, and then 40 or 45-minute intermission, then come back 45
yep.
minutes. So when you sing one woman, is this just you?
No. So it's a different kind of one woman show.
Okay.
I meet two women on my journey. So most of it is written by me, but the contributions that the other two women made contributions, so they wrote their own individual pieces. Yeah, so I meet them on a journey, and I think a lot of people can relate to the story of divorce, whether they've actually gone through a divorce or not. If they've gone through any type of relational hurt, they can relate to this story, because what I'm doing is I'm laying bare all my emotions on the stage. And you get to see the vulnerability. You get to see the pain, but you also get to see the process of healing and restoration. And of course, I could not have done this without my team. I have an amazing co-producer, Michelle Talkington. My director, Christina Buck, is phenomenal. And she lives next door to me. So how that happened was crazy.
Wow.
I went to her door because I was working on some choreography for, I was initially just going to do it by myself. It was just going to be, you know, like the Whoopi Goldberg show that gave her claim to fame. And so I was going to do that. And then, you know, I started working on the choreography, and I went to my neighbor's house, and I was showing it to her, and she said, you should do this, 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 and this. And I said, you're going to be my director.
Wow. Just like that.
Just like that. And I mean, we just left an interview on Channel 8 News.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been picking up pretty quickly. A lot of people can relate to the story.
All right, and one more time, the play is called From Divorce to Restoration. And how long is the run? Is it just a single night?
Oh, so we're going to do... So this Saturday is the premiere showing. We have another showing coming in September, but we have not been given the go on releasing the venue information because we're a part of a larger series. So the moment we are given the go to do that, we'll release that information for those who were not able to make this show. And we actually have a waiting list.
So would it be, can we promote it if you got a waiting list, or what do you want me to do? This is interesting.
Yeah. So what I'd like for people to do is to go on the website, email us at dtr@cagefreevoices.com and say, hey, I need to get tickets. So the moment that we put the information out there, we can shoot them an email, let them know this is the date and time, because we're going to find out very soon this month.
Give out that information one more time.
The email address is dtr@cagefreevoices.com, and the website is cagefreevoices.com.
All righty. So let us continue down the journey. So that answered one part of the question.
So, you're still trying to get.
Yeah, I'm still going to get some more information out of you. So prior to this idea, I know you had been an educator, and you know, you shared with me that you know you're a musician, an artist. You're just kind of a free-spirited creative, right?
Yeah.
So this is just the latest iteration for you in that journey of creativity. What else is percolating in your head? Because, you know, people always do ask me the same questions. I'm always developing, or I see the world in a certain way, that there's a niche that needs to be filled. And I think you probably process Absolutely. And think of it the same way.
Absolutely. So right now, just like you, I have Cage Free Voices Radio, and I mm-hmm. think there needs to be a platform for youth and young adults. And so my mind is always thinking about how can I give that platform to more youth and young adults who need to say something, and they have an artistic way in which they can say it. Mm-hmm. I also have another book that I started, and it is a fictional book. This will be my first work of fiction, and so I started working on, I think I have about 6 chapters of that written, and I do have the next idea for the next play. So
is this something that you think you want to pursue and continue to do? Or it sounds like you have more plays in mind that you want to write.
So it goes back to when I first got to my sister Trinaze's house. And this was in 2014 when I was looking for a place to live. And they were just immediately, they said, you can come here, you know. It goes back to that time when... I was just talking to her and talking to them, and I remember my brother in love saying, he read my third book and he said, you're gonna be like a Tyler Perry. Like, you're gonna build your own entertainment industry. And so I do plan on doing a whole lot more outside of just this one play. Mm-hmm. And we want to, like I said, going to the film series was definitely helpful for me to learn more about film as I look to venture off into that territory.
So Gwen Kelly, who moderated that panel, is your mentor. How did the two of you guys hook up?
What's the contribution
that she's had to your life?
So we just recently, she just recently became my mentor. Mm-hmm. This was, I attended the media summit that Dr. Avis had. And I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Avis Jones DeWeaver. She has a media summit. She had it actually in Arlington. And I met Miss Gwen there. So everybody's networking, and I ended up walking toward Miss Gwen, and I sat down, and we were just talking for a very long time. And I ended up asking her, can you be my mentor? And she was ecstatic, and we were both like, let's do this. And after that, I ended up having to do a pitch. And so I think that even motivated her more. And so in this process, she's been helping me to understand more about the corporate area, understanding more about how to market what I do. And she was the one who gave me the opportunity to find out more about film by attending the film series.
Right. Now, for people who don't know who Gwen Kelly is, and I've only met her once at that the panel we did, but I talked to her on the phone several times. She spent 15 years at Walmart.
She is
very well connected. I also did she tell you about the Denton Film Festival that she does down in Arkansas?
She may have mentioned it, but I know she's from Arkansas.
So she's a heavy hitter.
She is.
In that space. So yeah,
she's awesome. She's so down to earth. She's so sweet.
She is an amazing woman. We had so much fun in all of these pre-planning meetings for this event at the Martha's Vineyard African American Film Fest. That was a lot of fun. Now, were you there like the entire weekend, or did you just come out that one day, that Sunday?
I was there. I came Saturday and I came Sunday.
Okay, so did you see Sorry to Bother You?
No, I got there late Saturday because I had mandatory rehearsal.
That's so sad. You missed me. That was so sad.
I saw you the second day.
I had to moderate that panel too. So that was kind of fun.
I heard it was really good.
Well, Boots Riley's a special dude, man. We had him. We had him on the show last week. He's a special dude. But I'm really excited and looking forward to Saturday night. This show it starts at what time?
Starts at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:15.
Yeah, I noticed your people made sure I got a ticket.
Yeah, they did.
Am I sitting close?
All the special guests and media are sitting up close.
I'm gonna be looking at you like this the whole show.
The venue holds 70, so.
Nice. I'm looking forward to it. So we got a couple of minutes left. You know, you heard me ask our last guest about things they've learned, things they want to share. I'm always interested in the insights of other creatives, man, because I know I kind of work in my own bubble. And, you know, when my stuff is ready to be released, I'd be like, here it is, world, you can have it. But now I've learned that I keep everything close to the vest and I'm just creating. What about you? What is your kind of methodology of how you create, or your philosophy of what you're trying to do?
Ooh, this is a good question. I started off as an artist, but as an artist who was only focused on, can I make this hot? Mm-hmm. Can I make this dope? And the moment I shifted from that, and that moment came when I was performing my first feature at Busboys and Poets, and I was like, I'm just gonna pick like my dope pieces, and everybody was like, oh, that was dope. And my sister, I turned to my sister and I said, what did you think? She said, we could talk about it in the car.
And see, she was keeping it real with
she was. And so I say that to say, when we got in the car, she said, you dimmed your light,
right?
And she was like, you need to take your skill and craft it so you can tell a story. Mm-hmm. And not just focus on like piecemealing things, but your poetry is at an elevated level. It's not conversational, so you need to be able to tell a story with it. And what I've learned from her and her organization, Real Women, is to be real and authentic. And so authenticity is what really gets over to people. People can connect, and it's experiential versus I'm just watching and being entertained.
All right, so Saturday night from Divorce to Restoration, Bathsheba Smithen, it has been a pleasure. We got to do this again.
Yes, we do.
You know, you don't need to come in and talk about your play. You just come in and hang.
Oh, that's what's up.
You can just come in. And next time, I need some spoken word. I need something.
I know, because I was going to bring out Bathsheba, but you
no,
know.
No, next time. Keep them wanting more.
Keep them wanting more.
All right, love. Well, thank you for coming through, though, today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed this.
All right. And we're going to take a break right now. And we're going to come back. And it's going to be time for me to review the one movie that's coming out this weekend, Skyscraper. You guys keep it where you got it. You're listening to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. And we'll be right back. Biggie. Welcome back to our final segment, and that was a message from the Don Dada to all of his detractors, including darts for Nas and Wu-Tang members Raekwon and Ghostface Killah in the Notorious B.I.G.'s battle cry, Kickin' the Door. Now, this week's reviews are brought to you by thefilmgordon.com. Experience film through the eyes of a true film addict. Check out all of our film content at thefilmgordon.com. Now, this week in film, there's one major release to rule them all. But before we discuss that film, as always, cue the music. This week, we start with high-flying action film Nirvana, Skyscraper, which tells the story of a father who goes to great lengths to save his family from a burning skyscraper. Written and directed by Rawson Marshall Thurber, the film stars Dwayne Johnson and Nev Campbell. In this clip from the film, Will Sawyer, Johnson, asks his wife to do the impossible, or damn near close to it.
You're gonna fall through the fire. The magnets are gonna kick back on once you pass the fire line. But I need you to pull this handle in order to engage the braking system. It's about 500 feet from here until the fire line. I want you to count to five and pull the handle.
This is crazy.
Trust me.
Okay.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm scared.
It's okay to be scared. In order to be brave, we gotta be a little scared. Right? I need you to be brave right now. Can you do that for me?
Yeah.
I want you to hold on to your mom. Dad lives who?
Me.
That's right. Okay.
Okay, babe. We're gonna sit down. We're gonna brace ourselves, all right? Okay.
I love you.
You better.
After a horrific opening sets the stage explaining our hero's disability, we spring one decade into the future where former FBI agent and amputee Will Sawyer has been hired as a security expert for the tallest and presumed safest skyscraper in the world. As he prepares to sign off on his final inspection before residents are allowed to live in the tower's ritzy upper levels, danger strikes. A group of terrorists led by their leader, Corey Botha, Roland Mueller, are in search of a precious item housed within and set the tower, known as the Pearl, on fire. Unfortunately for Botha, he didn't plan on Sawyer's family still housed inside or the sheer will that Sawyer will do anything to make sure they're safe. And also, let's not forget, The Rock is the star of the movie. Of course there's deception and subterfuge, but at its tension-filled uber-action core is The Rock, who further cements his legacy as this generation's action star, a la Bruce Willis or Arnold Schwarzenegger. Much like Willis in Die Hard, in this film, The Rock must not only navigate a group of foreign terrorists, but also perform some of the most unbelievable stunts in recent memory. Not that he must enter a burning building, but also save the lives of the ones he loves, despite being overmatched by a group of assassins. Now, much of the sheer audacity of the story lies in the fact that the filmmakers, including Johnson, who serves as one of the film's producers, never forgets what's important to the audience. They revel in their ability to place Johnson in some of the most breathtakingly uncomfortable positions not many actors would try, much less perform on screen. Johnson's performance is a shot across the bow to fellow cinematic daredevil Tom Cruise. Maybe Johnson would never try this at home, nor should you, but the finished results are absolutely stomach-churning and impressive on the big screen. Over the past several years, Johnson has morphed from being a cinematic oddity to becoming a bona fide action hero with his performances in such films as Rampage, San Andreas, and the Fast and Furious franchise. His latest continues to push the envelope, proving that he is either severely pining for audience approval or that he's damn near half crazy. Now, logic is clearly not the goal here, as the fact that a tower can burn for such an extended amount of time and never buckle, or even how one can sustain multiple injuries and still be functional enough for the gargantuan task that Johnson must perform, attests. Now, while the science might not quite mesh, your sense of danger and the ability to cheer on The Rock's insane exploits will leave audiences delightfully entertained. Hell, not even the predictability matters, as Rock's sheer will triumphs over everything. Now, after watching Skyscraper, one can only imagine the smell of what The Rock could be cooking up for his next big adventure. I gave this film, believe it or not, a B-. I really enjoyed Skyscraper. It never tries to be more than what it is. It basically knows its foolishness and it's ridiculous, and you just go with it. It's like you leave your brain outside, you be good to go. All right, so that's it for us this week. And I want to thank all of our special guests that we had in studio today. Of course, Marquette Shepherd, Bathsheba Smithen, Wilson Morales. And as we say every week in closing, please see something good at the movies. You guys have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you on the other side. I'm out. Fuck you and all your expectations.